It's the merry-go-round speeding up the merry-go-round of insurance. Will insurance pay for this treatment? Yes, indeed. Insurance will pay for your chemotherapy, your radiation, a variety of different testing approaches. Will your insurance pay for very, very high quality therapeutic dose nutrient support? No, indeed, it will not. Will your insurance pay for the kinds of testing that will truly evaluate the function of your immune system? Many times not.
Well, I came across, first I saw the USA article, then I came across another article about cancer that sort of mirrors what my observations have been. And it says here that little known science, which the medical industrial complex has made it a practice to ignore or cover up, reveals that despite what the medical industry often claims, chemotherapy in particular just isn't an effective cancer treatment. Now, John, I just want to go on to state this. Dr. Harden B. Jones, a former professor of medical physics and physiology at the University of California, Berkeley, had been studying the lifespan of cancer patients for more than 25 years when he came to the conclusion that despite popular belief, chemotherapy doesn't work. He witnessed a multitude of cancer patients treated with the poison die horrific deaths, many of them meeting their fate much earlier than other patients who chose no treatment at all.
I see that with the people that I work with all the time, unfortunately. It is very, very interesting, though, that Dr. Jones, who has such a high level of credibility, being a former professor at University of California, Berkeley, after studying this for 25 or more years, he came to that conclusion. It was very interesting that none of this made the front pages of more newspapers. Interesting that it was on the front page of USA Today. Very interesting to me that it is not reported on television or even on radio news that chemotherapy, radiation, unfortunately, will lead to a demise of the patient sooner rather than later.
Well, here's what he further found, that cancer patients who underwent chemotherapy actually died more quickly, in most cases, than those who followed their doctor's recommendations by getting the treatment. Did that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The patients getting the chemotherapy died more quickly, in most cases, than those who followed their doctor's recommendations by getting the treatment. That doesn't make sense.
People who refused treatment lived. This is Dr. Jones talking about his study's findings. People who refused treatment lived for an average of 12 and a half years. Those who accepted other kinds of treatment, and I'm going to say most likely the mainstream chemo radiation routine, lived an average of only 3 years.
Well, here's a real eye-opener here. Breast cancer patients who reject all conventional therapies live four times longer than those who follow the system.
Okay, now, what does it say about the testing that the medical industry recommends with regard to breast cancer? Mammography. And more and more and more people are understanding that traumatic compression and radiation of hormonally sensitive tissue may very well contribute to the development of abnormal breast tissue.
Well, to state it in another way, refusing conventional cancer treatments and doing nothing resulted in cancer patients living more than four times longer than their more compliant counterparts. This is with the women with breast cancer. And this is something you'll never hear about from the mainstream media, which continues to peddle the myth that cancer patients somehow need poison injected into their bodies in order to survive and reach cure status. Now, I think chemotherapy is an exaggerated form of treatment because it's a real poison. Not that drugs aren't poisons also, but not as deadly. Although if you read the inserts on drugs, you'll see in many cases you can get deadly side effects from them also. But the point is, in all cases, there's no such thing as a drug deficiency, whether it be chemotherapy or another prescriptive drug. So therefore, if that's not the problem for your cancer or for your high blood pressure or for your diabetes, you need to look elsewhere. What did you do to your bodies for this to happen? And it wasn't that you forgot to take your chemotherapy or your other prescriptions. And that's the point we're trying to make here. Do what it takes even before you get that diagnosis, so perhaps you will be able to prevent it. For example, say you have high blood pressure. Well, in the majority of people with high blood pressure, you find that their diets are not as good as they should be. They're probably overweight. Maybe they don't exercise. They deal with a lot of stress. But you notice on that list, I didn't say they didn't take their blood pressure-lowering medications, because that's not the cause of high blood pressure.
Unfortunately, so many people that come to talk to me tell me that their doctors have them on a low-sodium diet. And I say very often the doctor has said, okay, watch your salt. And so these patients are very, very carefully reading labels for sodium. But what they have not been told by their doctors is, watch your sugar, because I see sugar as a much more toxic substance, toxic in the effect on blood pressure, much greater than sodium. And so many people think, okay, well, they've given up sugar and they're using the pink packet, the blue packet, the yellow packet, and they think that they're safe. But those very chemicals also derange your blood sugar chemistry, which ultimately leads to higher blood pressure.
One thing I tell patients in regard to breast cancer, a couple years ago there was a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and the point of the study was to see whether or not after doing 25 or 30 years of screening mammography in this country, have we reduced the incidence of breast cancer deaths. And they went on to say also that over the years there have been lots of studies done with over 300,000 or 600,000 women in these studies, half of them getting mammograms, the other half no mammograms at all, and the incidence of death from breast cancer was the same in both groups. So mammograms didn't reduce the death rate, because the thinking was, well, mammograms, we're going to catch it early, and we have such great treatments because we catch it early, we're going to save all these lives. But this is just a couple of years ago, but back in 1979, the American Medical Association published a study where they stated that many of the most common procedures for diagnosing and treating breast cancer, nearly all of which are still in use today, have done nothing to lower breast cancer rates or increase survival from breast cancer patients. And then there were two other studies, one out of Israel that was published in 1978, and another out of the United Kingdom that was published in The Lancet in 1980, had the same findings. Overall, survival of patients with primary breast cancer has not improved in the past 10 years despite increasing use of multiple drug chemotherapy for treatment of metastasis, explains the Lancet study, entitled Failure of Chemotherapy to Prolong Survival in a Group of Patients with Metastatic Breast Cancer. So, I mean, we keep doing this over and over again. We keep getting the same results. You know, we're not saving more lives. And this has been stated. And by the way, one of the great things about the internet is you can Google this information yourself, and you'll find it out for yourself. Of course, I know what the patients say. Well, how come my doctor doesn't know this? How come they haven't told me the same things?
People say that to me all the time, that you're a nutrition counselor, and I'm sitting talking to them, and why hasn't my doctor mentioned any of this? And so, going back to the recommendation with regard to blood pressure from their doctor's watch or salt, when indeed it could very well be their sugar, it could be their smoking, it could be their stress level, it could be any of a long list of lifestyle practices that are contributing to the development of their heart disease and circulatory disease. So blood pressure is this tiny little factor to take into consideration. Now, Dr. Slavin...
Well, let me just put it in a different way. If you go to a Buick car dealer looking to buy a car, is he going to tell you to buy a Ford? When you go to the physician, his training is basically to sell prescription drugs and promote chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. That's his training. He doesn't have training in other approaches in either disease prevention or in alternative treatments for disease. And in fact, they're not allowed to even recommend alternative approaches. They can only recommend prescription drugs, chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery.
Which brings me to the concept, what will people discover with testing that you offer in your practice? What will people discover years before their blood pressure starts to go up, years before their blood sugar starts to change, years before their cancer might appear?
Well, that's what testing does. Again, think of that analogy we alluded to earlier, is helping you to navigate the waters of disease and health. With testing, it'll tell you whether you're heading toward the reef or you're heading on a clear path. So you mentioned earlier how important knowing what your blood sugar is with regard to blood pressure. But high blood sugar, like or diabetes, associated with an increased risk of cancer, amongst a bunch of other diseases, heart disease, but cancer as well, stroke. These are the number one killers in most countries that are considered eating a Western diet. In fact, if you look at the countries that are shifting to a Western diet, you can see the shift in their diseases, where you have now an increase in cancer and heart disease that they didn't have before. So those are all the the points we're trying to make, that with proper testing, you can find out if you're heading toward the reef or there's clear sailing ahead. So you can look at your blood sugar, but more importantly, look at your insulin level. Look at your hemoglobin A1C. Look at your inflammatory markers. Look at the fats in the blood. And contrary to what you've been told, the fats in your blood, like cholesterol, are not raised by eating cholesterol. They're raised by eating carbohydrates or sugar. So it all points back, to your diet in most cases. So you need to get that feedback. But if all your doctor does when you go see them is a CBC and a chemistry panel, because he's looking to see whether you're sick enough to be admitted to the hospital or not, then you're destined to hit that reef and eventually make your way to the hospital.
Okay, Dr. Slavin, you were talking about navigating the very, very treacherous waters. Okay, and here's a whole long list of testing that will give you a heads up months and years before any symptoms become obvious. Okay. Once the people have discovered where their physiologic weakness might lie, what would their next step be? What do you have in the arsenal of your approaches to support people's good health? Where do you go?
Well, you would be amazed how much you can do by improving one's diet with regard to all the abnormal blood tests that people...
Not me. I wouldn't be amazed. No, not me.
No, not you. But, right? The listeners, our patients, are pleasantly surprised when I convince them to say, make this little change here, make that little change. And when we retest them, they see the improvements, whether their inflammatory markers go down, whether hemoglobin A1C goes down, which reflects sugar over a three-month period. And one of the areas I think that people are overlooking when it comes to what they're eating and carbohydrate or sugar intake is fruit.
Oh, yes.
They don't consider that a bad food, and they eat a lot of it, and that's what's affecting their lab work a lot.
The government food pyramid, faulty graph that it is, reminds people to eat their fruits and vegetables. And I tell people all the time, those nutrition categories are not equal. You have a very significant requirement for the nutrients present in vegetables, and fruits are almost as a treat, something to be eaten possibly as a small snack in between larger meals, definitely not to be used as a dessert, but fruits and vegetables are not equal. It's vegetables that are the underlying mainstay of your diet.
Well, and nuts and seeds.